Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show. This is Julie Callamine, your morning show host, and this morning I'm lucky enough to be joined by two communications managers from the Idaho Fish and Game Department. The first one is you, TJ Rotz. Hello.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. You're here for the Panhandle area, and someone we've not heard from before is Terry Thompson. Terry, you are communications manager for the Magic Valley. Hello, Terry.
Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, great. It's great to have you both. Well, we've got two really interesting topics to talk about this morning, and they're both about things that are coming into Idaho that we really would rather not have here. One we've talked about in the past, and that is the introduction of chronic wasting disease here, well, in parts of the state, but now definitely in the Idaho Panhandle. That's correct. And that's your area of expertise, TJ.
Yes,
Yes.
it is.
So the last time that we talked, we had quite a long talk about what chronic wasting disease was and how Fish and Game is dealing with it. But since then, we've had, I believe, some new regulations coming out about the hunting seasons, and you also had a controlled hunt. So just tell us what's new and what's going on now with chronic wasting disease.
Sure. So it's an ever-evolving situation, as you might imagine. But since our last conversation, we did have the chronic wasting disease surveillance hunt. So that ended on September 1st, and the goal of that was really to work with the public to gather additional samples to help us understand essentially how far and wide chronic wasting disease is. So we completed that, like I said, on September 1st. We are essentially awaiting results from the lab. So we send all of those samples to Colorado State University, and they get the samples back to us. And so we've gotten some of the samples back, but not all of them. So we're awaiting results on those. Once we have those, we're hopeful that we'll have a much better picture of kind of what we're dealing with, what the CWD situation looks like in Unit 1.
Sure. How many animals were harvested?
Yeah, so the goal was 200, and that's not a number that's just pulled out of thin air. That's actually a number that if you, for whatever your area of interest is, if you collect 200 samples, you're able to estimate what's called the prevalence rate of chronic wasting disease. And so that basically tells you like how prevalent is it in the population. So that was our goal. We did not hit that. We're sitting at 185 samples right now. We've talked with our folks in headquarters and consulted with others, and everybody seems to believe that that 185 is going to be very sufficient to help us estimate that prevalence rate. So what we're hoping to see when we get all these samples back is a prevalence rate below 2%. That's considered an acceptable prevalence rate that we're hoping to see that.
Okay, great. Well, what do you know about the current, basically the hunting regulations for deer and elk this year? Have there been any changes? Is it required that people get their deer tested?
Great question. So no, there have not been any changes to the structure of the hunting season. It's going to be just like what everybody has experienced in the past. There are no mandatory reporting or mandatory sampling requirements for chronic wasting disease. I may have said this last time, but part of that, and again, all of this could change. We're waiting these results back from the surveillance hunt, but part of that is because last year statewide we sent in 4,000 CWD samples to the lab. And just last year alone, there were roughly 4,000 deer harvested in Unit 1 alone. So if we require mandatory sampling, we're going to functionally double the amount of samples that we send in as a state and the load that's placed on the lab. So that may end up happening. We don't know yet. But for right now, as of today, the hunting season is moving forward just like it always has.
Okay, and you'll have enough. You feel that you'll have enough samples that you'll get a good idea of whether it's becoming a larger problem, what's going on with chronic.
Yeah, we do, but I guess I would also put a plug that part of our need and our hope is that now that we know CWD has been detected in Unit 1, that folks who hunt in that unit, particularly in the Bonners Ferry area and beyond that, that they will voluntarily provide samples to us because that really helps us gather a much broader picture of where else CWD might or might not be, particularly in Unit 1. So people can do that on their own. We've got videos on YouTube that show them how to do that. They can bring it, bring their deer into the regional office here. We'll do it for them. We're happy to do that. So we'd love to, we'll take as many samples as we can get.
Okay. Now I had a question from a listener the other day, and the question was, I've got that they had elk in their freezer, and it was from last year's season, and it wasn't in Bonner's Ferry, but it was in this area. And they asked the question, is there any way to test that meat that's still in my freezer, or is it really just too late for that?
It's too late for that, because in order to test for CWD, we need to be able to get access to the lymph nodes that are in the neck head region, or get access to brain tissue. So it's a pretty specific testing process. You can't just tell from the meat. We've got to get the actual lymph nodes.
Okay, good to know. I'll pass that along. And then anything else about this topic or any other little panhandle news that you think we ought to be aware of up here before I move on to Terry?
Yep, just a few quick things real quick. So last time you and I spoke, we talked about the community chat meetings that we were having in Bonner's Ferry, where people could join, come out on Tuesday evenings from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Forest Service Ranger Station there in Bonner's Ferry. We had those meetings for about 4 or 5 weeks. We really appreciate the people that came out and asked questions and voiced concerns. It was super helpful for us. We hope it was helpful for people that were there. Since we don't have any new results, we are not doing those until further notice. So last Tuesday was our last one. We will make announcements when we're starting those up again. It will likely be after we have results back from the surveillance hunt, so that we can share that with people. So that, and then I just want to address this, because this is one question I get all the time relative to CWD. People want to know if we're planning to eradicate the deer population. We can't do that. It's literally impossible to do that in Bonner's Ferry. There's an estimated 30 to 40 deer per square mile, highest deer densities in the entire state. So we can't do that, even if that's what would be the best solution. It's just simply not an option. So we're not pursuing that. So I just want to let people know that we are not in the business of eradicating deer populations. So if that's a concern, you can hear it from my mouth. We're not pursuing that.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem like that would be the solution anyway, with chronic wasting in lots of areas of the country. So it seems like that I've got to guess there's going to be a better way to deal with it than that.
Yep.
Yeah. So, well, TJ, we've enjoyed having you on KRFY numerous times, and I hope you'll sit with us for the rest of this interview, because you may have some input before we're done. But we've never talked to Terry Thompson. And Terry, you're in an entirely different region of the state, and a larger one. Does that mean your job is bigger?
Oh, I think TJ and I both have our hands full with the communication issues that we have in each of our regions. But even though we're separated by lots of miles, we still have a lot of the same concerns and same issues that we deal with.
I'm sure. Well, we know a little bit about TJ's background. We've asked him before, but tell us how you came to be in this position with Fitch and Game.
So I am the old guy of the regional communications managers. I'm just now completing 34 years with the agency. I will be retiring actually here in the next few months. My career started with Idaho Fish and Game in 1991 at a headquarters in Boise. And after 10 years here, then I went to Alaska and put in almost 20 years with Alaska Fish and Game. Retired from Alaska, but wasn't ready to retire. So came back to Idaho. Basically, I grew up, or I went to high school here in the Magic Valley, went to college here. I did go to ULI, go Vandals. So I've got a long career with both Idaho and Alaska Fish and Game agencies, and love what I do. I think TJ and I both have the best jobs in the agency. Totally enjoy what I do. And so I'm not really looking forward to retirement, but retirement at some point needs to come to everybody.
That's so true. Well, congratulations on a retirement and a great career. It sounds like you've had a great time with Fish and Game departments, but now you're kind of in the midst of it with introduction of a non-native invertebrate that we're not too thrilled about, the quagga mussel, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We had a detection of quagga in the Snake River here in the Magic Valley. It was last September 18th, I believe, if you look at the calendar, when it was one of those things when you get this message and that you hoped you were never going to get to hear or see, which was the Idaho Department of Agriculture, who has the responsibility for monitoring and early detection of invasive species in Idaho. They've had a monitoring program going on for about 15 years, and they detected quagga mussels, which was the first detection in Idaho. And actually, it was the first detection of quagga mussels within the Columbia River Basin. So, kind of a big deal in terms of the impacts to fish and wildlife, but more importantly, to the economy of Idaho and the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, because for those of us who don't know much about these mussels, they are a problem. And why is it a commercial problem? What is the reason they're such a problem?
Well, I think first you have to look at the biology. They're extremely prolific. And so an individual quagga mussel can produce up to 1 million Belligers or larvae per year. And so they're extremely prolific. And then what they do is once they settle out of becoming a larval organism, they settle on hard substrates, which could be irrigation infrastructure, power structure infrastructure, and they can actually damage or plug irrigation pipes, hydroelectric production equipment. And so they can have a tremendous economic impact on a region. And here in southern Idaho and all of Idaho, we rely heavily on hydropower as an energy source. Here in southern Idaho, irrigation is huge for our agricultural community. And those producers rely on irrigation systems being able to pump water. So the detection of quagga mussels from an economic standpoint to the state and to the region could be catastrophic. Plus, from a fish and wildlife standpoint, it's prime the impact to our fisheries is probably the biggest thing because they can absolutely, because of sheer numbers of mussels in the water, can filter out all of the phytoplankton, zooplankton out of the water. So the base of the food chain can basically be taken up by the mussels, depriving our fish resources of a food source.
Okay, are they a cold water species, a warm water species, or do they just like any water?
I'm going to say they pretty much just like water. They're native to Ukraine, and I believe it was in the late 80s that they were introduced into the Great Lakes. Through ballast water is how they think that they ended up in the US. And they've been slowly spreading across the states. You see them, our closest water bodies would be Lake Powell, so down south, Lake Mead. So those would be more warm water impoundments. But I think one of the things that was so unique about our detection here in southern Idaho was it was in a river system. Most of the detections have been in lakes and reservoirs, which makes treatment a little bit different than what we saw last year with ISDA taking that lead. But interestingly, there was a detection this spring of quagga in the Colorado River system. So they've always been in the Colorado system, but down in more lakes and reservoirs. So now having it being detected in the Colorado River is problematic for those river stretches as well.
Sure. So, well, let's move on to talk about what y'all did to try and control this infestation.
Sure. So, as I said, ISDA, Idaho Department of Agriculture, is the lead agency. I have to give a tremendous amount of thanks and admiration to that agency because, you talked to TJ just a minute ago about chronic wasting disease. Well, Fish and Game has been monitoring 20 plus 25 years for chronic wasting disease. ISDA has been monitoring testing for about 15 years. And I think what both of these situations show is that early monitoring and detection is key. And so going back to quagga, ISDA had a quick response plan in place so that once it was the quagga mussels were detected, that rapid detection or rapid response plan was put into place. And they did a tremendous job. Just for instance, from the date of detection until the date of treatment to start to eradicate them out of the river was about 2 weeks. Colorado had an instance where it was detected in a small lake, I believe it was. It took them over 6 months before they actually put a treatment plan in place. So it's almost unprecedented what ISDA did, working alongside partners like Fish and Game to treat the river. So what they did is they the best course of action was determined to be chelated copper. That chelated copper is a liquid and about 45,000 gallons ish of copper was put into the Snake River over a 2 week time period. They needed to maintain a level of one part per million of this copper in the river to get what they felt was a sufficient amount of copper to kill any organisms in the river. Unfortunately, we knew going in that that copper was going to impact fish. We actually went in with the anticipated that we were going to see 100% fish kill in that reach of the Snake River. It did kill fish, but it didn't kill all the fish. And it was interesting to us to find that the copper impacted different species at different levels. Carp, suckers, northern pike minnow, all were very sensitive to the copper, and we saw large mortalities on that. Unfortunately, it was also lethal to sturgeon. With working with our partner, Idaho Power, who's done quite a bit of work on that section of the river, estimated that I believe there was either 49 or 50 sturgeon in that reach of the river that was going to be treated. We detected 48 mortalities on sturgeon. So we could pretty much assume that it was 100% fish kill on sturgeon. I guess if there is a good news to that number, it's all of those fish came out of our hatchery system. So we didn't lose any of the wild stock sturgeon. But interestingly, largemouth bass, smallmouth bass, the sunfish survived. We saw very little mortality on those species. So good news, bad news from that standpoint. But so we feel good in the sense that we didn't see 100% fish kill. But we knew going in that that was going to be an impact of the chelated copper.
Okay, and how do you feel you did with the quagga mussels? How's any results that you're able to report on that?
So, from my understanding, from ISDA has been aggressively monitoring this section of the Snake River this year, and to date, they've had no detections, which is awesome. That's exactly what we were hoping for. The interesting part of the life cycle of quagga mussels is that they don't reproduce veligers or larval offspring until water temperatures have gotten about 54, 55 degrees Fahrenheit. And so they weren't able to start doing any real testing until late May, early part of June. So we've now been into this enhanced or more aggressive monitoring for a couple months, but so far it's good. But ISDA will be the first to tell you that it's going to take at least 5 years before they will declare the river to be quagga free.
Okay.
So.
But a good start. Yes, at least a good start. Now, on a larger scale, and maybe TJ or you, Terry, one of you can speak to this. What does this mean for the state in general? For example, us up here in the panhandle, is there any active testing going on? Is it all done at boat check stations? You know, like, what does it look like for the state as a whole?
So I do know, so the legislature stepped in this last year, last session, and has strengthened the funding source for monitoring these detection sites as boats, watercraft are brought into the state. So they've expanded that. But ISDA has been testing and monitoring waters across the state for the last 15 years. So this is not just a Southern Idaho issue. And I do, TJ can help speak to this too, but I think every major highway system coming into the state has a early detection check station that watercraft are required to stop in at. While Northern Idaho hasn't had a detection yet, we want to keep it that way. But the thing about flowing rivers is that what passes by us in Twin Falls is going to eventually flow by Lewiston. It's going to flow by all of the hydroelectric facilities on the Snake and Columbia Rivers. So this is not a Magic Valley issue. This has now become a regional issue.
100%. Yes. Well, TJ, do you want to speak just for a moment about what our inspection, watercraft inspection situation is?
Sure. And I don't know a ton about it because, as Terry said, that is through ISDA. But I do know that they're all over the panhandle as well. I mean, anybody who's driven coming in from Washington to Idaho on I-90, you'll hit one as soon as you come in. There's one at Samuels, just north of Sandpoint. So they are around. Very thankful that they are, because anybody that lives in the panhandle or knows of the panhandle knows that we have a lot of water that we are very protective over. Lake Ponderay, Coeur d'Alene Lake, Priest Lake, gems of the panhandle. And so we care deeply about those. And I know ISDA does too. So very thankful that it's being monitored.
Yeah, very good. So I'm just, of course, learning that it's somehow I was under the impression that it was Fish and Game that was kind of in charge of those check stations. But now I understand the difference. And I journeyed to Canada recently, right about the time that the treatment for quagga mussels was happening or being reported on. And the Canadian customs folks were telling us that it was likely that they were going to be changing the requirements for bringing boats from Idaho into Canada. So I guess we'll all stay tuned and see how much stricter that's going to be getting, but probably safe and a good idea. But I think it's going to be a more complicated process if you want to bring any watercraft into Canada from Idaho in the future. But it is the way it is, right? Well, guys, is there anything else you might like to share before I thank you and conclude this interview? Anything else from you, Terry, or from you, TJ?
I'll just add one thing really quick. And there's a mantra of clean, drain, dry. And we want people to really take that to heart. You may not think that you're coming from a a body of water that has an invasive species in it, and or anything, you know. So it should just become standard practice. We shouldn't have to wait till we have a situation where we have a detection. It's just good practice to keep your equipment, and that could be your fishing waders on up to your watercraft. So, you know, this is one of those things. It's up to every person to ensure that we don't have invasive species of any kind being spread across the landscape, because we've become a very mobile society. And so a boat that could be in Lake Mead today could be in Coeur d'Alene Lake in just a couple days.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. That's a great concluding thought. And anything from you, TJ Ross?
Yeah, I just want to thank folks for listening, and encourage to tell people that, particularly in the Panhandle, that if they have questions, concerns, anything related to CWD or any other topic, we are an open book. I know some people may say that's not the case, but we value transparency. We value being accessible to the public. So I encourage people to call. They can ask to talk directly to me. Call the regional office. They can talk to me. Any one of our staff here would be happy to talk to them. And I hope people take advantage of that.
I sure hope they do too. I've found y'all to be that way, and I appreciate Fish and Game very much. Well, listeners, this has been a great update on two areas of very important concern here in the state. This has been the KRFY Morning Show, and we were happy to be joined by two regional communication managers from Idaho Fish and Game, TJ Ross and Harry Thompson. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you. Thanks, Julie.